Hey, what's up? It's Doug here. Wanted to pop in before the episode. This is part two of the happiness series that Carl and I recorded in the middle of like 2024 before he quit the show. This one is roughly about purpose. It's part of a series. However, I think each one of the episodes should mostly stand alone. We're going to end up doing a few more episodes. And if you have any questions, shoot me an email, doug@milehighfi.com, and thoughts or questions about this episode or others. But if you get it to me in the next few weeks when the episode comes out, then there's a good chance I'll be able to integrate your question into some of the upcoming episodes as we go. Let's get to the episode now.
I should like to know which is worse, to be ravished 100 times by pirates, have a buttock cut off, and run the gauntlet of the Bulgarians, and be flogged and hanged in an auto de fa, and be dissected, and to have to row in a galley, in short, to undergo all of the miseries we have, each of us have suffered, or to simply sit here and do nothing? That is a hard question. And that is from Candide by Voltaire. Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I'm Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Huntington.
Doug, today we're going to talk about finding purpose in life. This is what everyone wants to know because they're afraid of being bored. First, we're going to talk about why quitting your job itself might be overrated. Then we're going to discuss what your relationship with work should look like. Then we'll discuss our best tips for preparing for retirement. Then we'll talk about how to live your best retired life. This is part two of our series on happiness. In part three, we're going to talk about the importance of mindset, but for now, it's purpose. So this quote, Doug, I have to say something about it. This is from Candide, Voltaire, one of my favorite books. And the backstory behind the quote is this group of people goes through all these horrible things. And then at the end, they become rich. And because they're rich, they have nothing to do. So they're just sitting there and they're like, this is horrible. This is just as bad as all that shit we went through, which I think is a great setup for this show because everyone needs purpose. What did you think of that quote, Doug?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And there, I guess we observe it in various ways with not necessarily ultra rich people, but folks that stop progressing, I guess.
Yeah, you see a little bit now and then in modern life, and you see it in the form of people who win the lottery because they don't expect this. They've got normal jobs. And then all of a sudden, they don't have to work. So they quit. And a lot of them are just lost. I remember there was one family that lived near us that won one of the biggest lotteries at the time. They lived in the same town. And I think they won $40 million. And the guy quit his job. And he's like, yeah, I don't know what to do with myself. I think after a couple of months, he had bought a bowling alley or some stuff like that. So pretty interesting. So that's what we're going to talk about today, finding purpose. That is the purpose of today's podcast.
And when did you run across the quote? Did you read the book?
Yes, I had to read that for history class in college. I hated the class, hated the teacher, but it's a great book. Do you know who Voltaire is?
I know the name, yeah. Yeah. But I don't know much about him. Philosopher type?
Yeah, he was kind of responsible. I think he created the whole idea of the Enlightenment, so pivoting Europe from the Dark Ages and all these horrible things to science and reason and logic.
All right. And you remembered it from back in college, huh?
Yeah, it's a great book. I did not like my teacher, but the book is awesome. You should check it out sometime. It's if you see the cover of it, you won't want to read it, but it's good. Very sarcastic and witty and cynical, kind of like me.
Very nice.
Yeah. Okay, so before we begin, there's a couple of things I want to say. And number one is, if you're listening to this podcast thinking we're going to tell you what your purpose is, we can't do that because just like happiness, it's complex and it's different for everyone. But what we can do is help you set up the conditions for finding your purpose. So when you listen to this show, we're going to be talking about work and your relationship with it. And that might not sound like a way to find your purpose, but we're setting up the conditions in your life so you don't build your life around your job. So you build your life around your purpose instead. So that's why we're going to be talking about some of this stuff, which might not make a lot of sense initially, but hang in there. It'll all make sense eventually. Before we get into it, I thought Doug and I should tell the audience what FIRE life looks like for us. So Doug, what does your life look like?
Well, and to clarify, I haven't really retired. And if you've listened to all the other episodes, you know, I had a corporate job for about 10 years. I got laid off and then I became self-employed basically. So it's been a weird blur of self-employment, which I worked really hard for a few years and then I've slowly scaled it down. So I'm continuing to work, but it mostly looks like what we're doing right here or sitting at a computer typing a little bit. So I'm not really retired and I'm not sure that I'll actually retire. And I'll always be able to say like, oh, I'm working on some little thing on the side, perhaps a sabbatical here and there. But my Phi life, my wife did just retire. But generally, I noted sleep as number one because it's when I've lacked sleep in the last couple of weeks, I noticed it immediately. So sleep is super important. That is a core piece of me being happy and pleasant to be around. And exercise, I was telling you earlier, Carl, food and cooking, like we don't talk about it a huge amount, but that's probably one third of my brain capacity goes to thinking about food or cooking or acquiring food to cook. And I think it's part of like just growing up in my family, half Filipino, like food was just like a core piece of like our day and our life in general. Creativity, some sort of reading, some kind of writing, maybe some hobbies like hiking or exercise or guitar. I've been spending more time with guitar. I haven't played anything for you recently, but I've gotten better over the last couple of years. So yeah, there's a lot of like leisurely stuff going on. I like to get out in nature and hike, even if I, you know, can't necessarily get out to a bigger park. There's a lot of places around here in the Front Range of Colorado where, you know, we can, you know, like we did last week, we went out, hiked with a couple friends, and then it was a great, you know, 4 or 5 hours hanging out. Of course, there's some socializing mixed in with all that stuff. Food often requires socializing, and same with the nature and the hiking and all that stuff. Usually there's some other folks around. So that's kind of, I mean, it seems like a light vacation all the time.
That's cool. One thing you mentioned, which I think is important and which we'll talk a little bit more later on, is you said you still work, but the difference is you are working for yourself. No one is telling you you have to work and you're doing it voluntarily, right? You don't need more money at this time. You're financially independent and you're doing it on your own volition.
Correct. Correct. And I mean, I'm actually, maybe we'll get into part of this, but there are pieces, and we've maybe mentioned it before, I don't know if it's on air, but there are pieces of the work that I'm doing where I'm like, I don't enjoy it as much anymore and I should get rid of it, but I'm actually struggling with either getting rid of it. And I'm in this sort of limbo period where I'm trying to decide, like, how am I going to spend my time? If this activity doesn't serve me anymore, if it's not helping people in the same way, or maybe I just moved on, I don't care anymore and I should do something else. So I'm struggling, like letting some stuff go, which I think that's probably natural. Like when people have a routine, it's hard to like break the routine unless there's some precipitating event.
Sure. Okay, cool.
What about you? Yeah.
Yeah. My routine revolves around exercise now. This has shifted. I didn't used to prioritize that, but now I think it's extremely important to keep yourself in shape and to stay active. I try to get 25,000 steps a day. I also do a weight workout 2 out of 3 days. You mentioned that you work. I work too. And work is an interesting four-letter word. I don't think it has to mean... The thing that comes into everyone's mind when you say that is a job with a boss and you have to go somewhere to do it. But work can mean many different things. At this point in my life, it's helping to run our co-working space. We give tours, we clean up, things like that. It's working on our book. It's working on this podcast and the podcast I have with Mindy and working on the blog. But similar to you, it's all voluntary and it's not necessarily for the money. Some of it makes a little bit of money, but not that much. I like to prioritize downtime now, which is something I still need to work on. We have kids, so they take up a lot of time. And then, like you said, socialization. So hanging out with other people.
And what does a downtime look like for you? What do you do there?
I'm trying to reestablish a meditation practice so I can work on quieting down my brain. And one thing I've noticed with myself recently is I used to sleep the whole night through And now I don't. I'll wake up like at 3 and then at 5. And sometimes if I'm on vacation, I can always go back to sleep after the 3 a.m. wake up. But after 5, usually when I'm at home, I can't. If I'm on vacation, I can. So I wonder if I can work on shutting down my brain through a meditation practice, if that is going to help me go back to sleep. It's so annoying. You wake up at 5 and then you're like, okay, I need to go back to sleep. And then your brain's like, but you should do this, this, this. You can like go for a walk or get started with the exercise or catch up on this book or podcast. And then you can't shut down. And then you lay there for 15 minutes and then you just give up and get out of bed.
Yeah. I feel you. Especially this time of year, we're recording at the end of May. The days are just getting longer. The sun's coming up earlier. And when it gets a little bright at like 4:55, I'm up. Like the last 2 weeks or so, I've been waking up before 5 and I lay there. Georgie hears me stirring a little bit. That's the dog. And then she'll stir a little bit and she'll maybe nudge me and like, hey, is it about time for breakfast or whatever? So I try to lay there. And I mean, it's not often. It's only like once every 10 days where I can like fall back asleep and sleep until 7. Of course, then I'm like, I've missed like the most beautiful time of the morning where it's very quiet and the sun hits the mountains and all that stuff. So it's tough.
Yeah. If I could just be asleep at 9 o'clock, then the 5 a.m. wake up time would be okay. But then I just wake up at 4 instead.
Yeah. And as we're moving into this, we do our notes separately. So you made some notes and then I have a bunch of contrarian views on whatever you wrote. Not that I disagree with you, but they're just alternative thoughts. Because I'm trying to think like what the listeners, what you out there might be thinking to say like, oh, these guys are full of shit. They don't even know what they're talking about. They're up there in their ivory tower in Longmont. So I put some alternative views. So I'm not coming at you personally, directly, although some of them are, but you'll know.
No, I do appreciate that. I don't want to get stuck in my own tunnel vision. And, okay. A conversation is much more interesting if you have counterpoints.
Okay. So I'll disagree with you the whole time.
Okay. No. I disagree with that take, Doug. Okay, let's get into it. The first topic we have to talk about is the whole RE part of FIRE. So FIRE is financial independence, retire early. And I tend to think the retire early part of it is overrated. The FI part is super important because then you get the options to do whatever you want. But then there's some people I think like Pete would always maintain that, yeah, you should almost everyone should definitely leave their job. And I'm not sure if he's ever explained exactly why everyone needs to leave their job, but that's a big focus of his life and his blog. What do you think about that? Do you think everyone should quit? Do you think that's the whole end purpose, Doug?
I tend to agree. I would love to hear Pete explain his reasoning because there could be a specific reason. You know, it could come down to like greater environmental causes or something like that, me putting words in his mouth, but like that makes some sense. But it depends on what your priorities are. And I think, you know, my background in the corporate world, in the consulting world, or working for like tier one companies, like huge companies, I'm pretty sure that I would advise most people that are working at those big companies, they'd be better off like retiring from that kind of work and doing something else. The value that they're able to bring would be a lot more worthwhile to the whole world if they didn't work at those bigger companies. Of course, then we wouldn't have all the equipment and all the awesome computers and like cell phones that work all over the place. Like I realize there's a trade-off, and if everyone quit, then you run into some issues there. But generally, I think the corporate world, most people are not very happy. There are some, and we've had some people email and say, hey, I'm a top performer. I love my job. I love the people I work with. I'm crushing it, blah, blah, blah. Very rare. That's probably 5% or less, just like by definition. That's it. So most people don't like their job. Most people would probably be happier leaving that commute behind, think you're on Zoom meetings, wasting your fucking time with like people that didn't put together a proper agenda or like they're lightly incompetent. You're working with me, all right? Imagine that. So, long answer, yeah, probably a lot of people should retire, but it depends. And mostly I'm talking about corporate type jobs, teachers, education, like there's a whole other different segment, which I have no experience in. And those are completely different and they bring different value to the employee, I guess.
Yeah. You mentioned an interesting number. You said 5% or less of people you think like truly are in love with their jobs.
I mean, like 90% of stats are made up. So who knows?
I see what you did there.
Yeah. I think a lot of there are stats. I think it's like 30% or so. There's a Gallup poll. The last one I remember is from a few years ago, 2018 or something like that. But like, I want to say it was roughly 60% of employees are generally unhappy. And it could be like super unhappy to lightly unhappy with their job. So there's only about 30% or so that are like really enjoy their job. They find it rewarding. They want to keep doing it.
Yeah. So this is such an interesting question, Doug, because I think a lot of people like their core work. And I liked mine too. Like writing code was super fun, but I never liked what I was working for. Like I work for Sears, like writing code for cash registers. I don't give a shit about that. Or like life insurance, like writing life insurance rules. Don't fly small planes or scuba dive if you want cheap life insurance. So that's one part of it. I think a lot of people like their co-work, but they might not like the context that they're doing it. And that aside, you've got time limits. You can't work whenever you want to. Like most jobs are going to require you to be there for a certain amount of time, or they're going to want you to get a project done in 3 months. So you're going to have to be online or whatever. So there's all these rules that go around it. So even if I really would have liked my coding and really liked the coding I was doing for, I don't know what, maybe a car company or something. I have no idea. Something that would have been actually interesting or an industry that gave me joy. You still have to be there. I remember working at my job, my last job when we lived in our previous house, I could look out the window. It was in back of me and see, like we could see the mountains, like Rocky Mountain National Park mm-hmm. out my window. So sometimes I'd be having a good day writing code. And then you turn around and look at the window and see that you're like, well, the job is okay and kind of fun, but I'd sure as hell rather be outside. So when you said that 5% or less number, I was thinking like 1%. And the definition of that would be someone who would do their job, even though they're super rich, or they would do their job for free. They would give all their money to charity or just show up and do it. I've only had one person say that to me in my entire life. And he was an anesthesiologist that I met at Camp Phi. He said he loved his job so much. He wants to do it forever, even if it didn't pay him anything. So I don't know what is so rewarding about putting people down, but good for him.
And the other way to frame it too, right? Like I said, I work, you say you work. We could probably do this indefinitely, right? We're going to do this show until we're like 90, right? No, but basically like, because we've designed the work that we want to do, we can kind of do it indefinitely. And if we're like, you know what? Like, we're done with this show, then we can move on to other stuff. Or like, if you're like, I want to stop doing the show with Mindy, for example. No, I'm just kidding, Mindy. I know she listens to this show every episode. I think it would be it would be dumb if we designed jobs where we're like, we don't like it. So, I mean, I think we could keep doing it. And I imagine like other people have found a specific vocation where they're like, I like doing this job or whatever. Or they love the people. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people don't like their jobs. It could be external factors like a commute or like the specific, maybe not your boss. Maybe it's like a couple levels up, but that impacts exactly what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. And it doesn't really impact the exact job they're doing, but it can have a negative impact on the person's like contentness or happiness or whatever. And it, like I said, it could be a commute. Like that would destroy my day. Like if I had to drive an hour to record this, no fucking way.
Yeah. Sometimes I can't even make it to your house and you live like a mile away from me.
One thing you pointed out, which I'm surprised like we didn't write it on everyone. Like part of it is having autonomy, right? So like choosing what you want to work on. And there's a couple factors. I've heard it, any of these happiness books or, you know, different things that you could study. You want to do the work you want to do, like whatever projects, how you want to do it, when you want to do it, which is a big thing. So if you're working for someone else, you don't get to choose. Typically, you don't get to choose when you're doing the work, and then who you want to work with. So like many of those factors are out of your hands if you're working for someone else. And typically, you can't do much about it.
Yeah.
So that's what ruins jobs for me.
Yeah, you have to answer to someone else. I think that might be one of Pete's main reason. I just don't think he likes taking orders, and neither do I. I'd rather just do my own thing or have a very loose relationship with my work. If I don't feel like doing it today, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. And then on the other side, like there's a lot of people who want to have the direction and structure provided. They don't want to have to figure it all out on their own. But like, yeah, me, you, and Pete, like, I think we're all the same. We don't want people to tell us what to do, basically.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I think a lot of people do like that. There's a quote, some people love the handcuffs that bind them or the cages they're in or something like that. And isn't that interesting? Some people want to be told what to do. Yeah, I can't relate to that, but yeah, there you have it. Those people are the people probably not cut out for Phi.
Right. Or they could be. They would need like the extra structure. Like you have to plan a little more ahead of time. So
yeah, maybe a strong partner or a strong framework or routine around their life once they leave. Let's talk about relationship with work. Doug and I don't work, or we kind of work, I guess. I feel like calm, especially what I do work. Yeah, it's sort of work, but not really. Not like y'all work where you have to go to a place or be online for 8 hours a day and be online at a certain time and have meetings and Zoom calls, like you said, Doug, and all that. So the first thing I thought of with this, and the whole point of this section, Doug, is to keep work at an arm's length. Like I want to have a very loose relationship with Doug, I do want to have a loose relationship with you. I would have a very loose relationship with work. When I had my first job, they were having all these layoffs, and I've told this story before. There was one guy named Chuck who got laid off, and the guy's life was built around work. There were all these intramural teams. He was young and all this stuff going on, and he was involved in all of them. He worked out at the workout place at the company headquarters, and then he got canned. And I remember the guy like crying when he got fired. I'm like, oh geez. And after I saw that, I'm like, man, I really got to keep work at an arm's length. I don't really want to be friends with anyone here because this can end at any second. And if that ends, I'm probably not going to be friends with them anymore, and it might get awkward and all that. So I don't know. Doug, do you have another perspective on this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one side note that's interesting is like you still do that to this day. Like we pretend like we're friends for the show, but you clock in, there's actually a clock, punch clock upstairs. And then, yeah, you just get paid hourly. And I joke saying that I have to approve your PTO, but actually approve your PTO. There's like a form and everything.
I approve that. You're pretty generous with the policies. You let me go to the bathroom at least once every hour during the podcast. I know no more than 5 minutes, but.
Yeah. And that's actually what's behind that curtain right over there. It's just one of those buckets with a seat on it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a nice bucket, though.
The other perspective here is I think it's okay to, even though I'm not a huge fan of like the corporate structure, to be friends and immerse yourself in that environment. It sounds like Chuck had some other shit going on, to be honest with you. And, you know, he was sad he lost his job, but he built his life around it. And part of it, I mean, I worked on some consulting projects and we traveled. And basically, it's like your family on the road. And sometimes it was small teams, sometimes it was bigger teams. Sometimes you were like in a city, other times like a pretty remote, you know, sort of warehouse that was pretty far away from anything fun to do. I definitely got close to some people while we were working on the project. I mean, sometimes you would like be in the same home airport. So you would like fly out together, share a car, you stay at the same hotel, you commute to the office. So you're basically with the person or people all the time. And of course, you could keep people at arm's length, but also you could find like a great friend. Like I made great friends for many of the projects. So I think it's totally okay to immerse yourself and have a good time. And all the things that we talk about we value in our day, exercise, cooking, whatever, socializing, all this other stuff. You could do all that stuff with people that you're working with and maybe improve your work situation so that you're actually having a better time. So I think Chuck had other issues.
Cool.
What do you think?
I don't know. It's interesting. Have you read some of these studies? I've seen a couple in the past year, or maybe not studies, maybe news stories about men who quit and then are lost in life, or not men who quit, but like older males who retire.
No, I haven't seen those.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone about this in economy, and she said that males who retire have the highest, or their suicide rate is increasing at a faster pace more than anyone else. And the reason is, if you look at it, they didn't have much going on in their lives. So their social network and all their validation and everything was tied up in their job. So once they left, they had nothing to do. And you hear about this with military people as well sometimes, because that's even worse. Oh, like yeah. A lot of times you live there and your whole life is really that and nothing else. So you feel a little bit lost and disconnected after you leave. And I'm trying to look this up. No. Yeah, it said the largest percent increase in suicide rates between 2001 and 2021 occurred among men ages 55 to 64, which is interesting. Yeah, and I saw it with my own dad. He lost his job in the Great Recession. He was in construction, and then all the construction jobs dried up, and that was how he validated himself. He loved his job. He was good at it. That's what he did. And when he didn't have that anymore, like probably the most important component of his life was gone. He just had no idea what to do with himself. He didn't work at building a life outside the job while he had the job. So I say, Doug, a job is a place to make money. If you like it, that's great. If your coworkers aren't assholes, that's another bonus. But try not to build your life or validate yourself around your work.
That's fair. And I think, you know, the other part, those folks that retire, if they don't have a good social structure, if it's all at work, then I can see major issues. And I think, you know, some of those studies or folks that are in that situation, like that's what they run into. And there's no, like maybe if you're not a church going person, right? There's huge community around like churches, right? So if you don't go to church and then you stop going to work and then you're just around, like I could see it being very unmoored and confusing.
Yeah.
So
listless.
All right. Anything else? Did you validate yourself through your work?
I don't know if validation is the right word. I worked really hard. I was always paranoid and insecure with my job, but validation is probably the wrong word for it. I just wanted money. I remember when I was interviewing for my first job, I went for an interview at this place. It was Kraft. I'll go ahead and say it. All of us recruits, it was a big recruiting day. So there's like 50 people there who were graduating from college. And they're like, we have just reviewed all of our titles. And now instead of a junior programmer, you're going to be like a junior assistant, junior to the VP's assistant or some bullshit like that. I'm like, who gives a shit about any of this? Just pay me. That's all I want. Pay me more money than what the other people are going to do. And hopefully I'll have interesting work around that too. But I don't know. I didn't really value any of that. I valued that the job was close to me, so I didn't have to drive 2 hours every day. And I valued that it paid me well. And after that, I didn't really care. And that's that was kind of the focus of my career. Like as soon as I could, I became a contractor to get my pay up, a consultant. And then, eventually became a like corp to corp situation instead of an employee, which was a further increase. But I don't think that's necessarily the healthiest way to look at it either, just to be so hell-bent focused on money. But I guess it worked out okay for me.
Okay. Yeah, you were like a mercenary. You're like, I'm not making friends around here. Fuck all you guys. And you call me the janitor, just pay me more than these other assholes over here.
Yeah, call me the head shit toilet cleaner. I'd couldn't care less what my title is.
How many years did you have a corporate job?
Oh, man. A corporate job like before being a consultant. I worked for a little bit less than 20 years, and that was probably 3 or 4 years of my career. So most of the time I did consulting.
Okay. But overall, you worked for about 20 years?
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. All right. Cool. Anything else on this before we move?
No, let's move on.
Before we get to the meaty stuff, like preparing for retirement and making sure it is a success, let's hear from our sponsor. It's Ghostbed. And Carl, how you been sleeping? What's going on with your sleep habits these days?
Yeah, I do have an interesting update. But before I tell you about that, Doug, I have a question for you. It might be kind of uncomfortable, so brace yourself. I know we've been roommates before, but I didn't pay attention, and it might be a little bit different when we're roommates at a conference. What do you normally wear to bed?
Well, as you know, typically at conferences, totally nude. But at home, I'll typically wear just boxer briefs and socks. I wear socks that are supposed to help you sleep. And yeah, even nude, of course, I wear socks. Again, as you know. Yeah, so it's really built for me to like be cooler. So yeah, what about you? What do you wear at home normally?
Yeah, I usually just wear underwear. And even now, like the temperature is changing here in Colorado, the sun's up late. I think we're going to have a 90-degree day, and our bedroom's on the second story and it faces south, so our bedroom probably heats up more than any other room. So now I'm thinking of even abandoning the very few clothes I wear and just go on the full thing, like you, Doug, like you at the conferences. Mm-hmm. Because I sleep warm, and it can be kind of miserable once it gets warm.
Well, the cool thing, and just quick mention, the Ghostbed, they have many different mattresses, but they have the Ghost Ice technology, which is like a cooling layer in there, which is very helpful. And I'm curious, do you wear socks when you sleep too?
I don't. Sometimes in the winter I would do that, but then I would wake up and my feet are all hot, so then I kick them off. So gotcha. Yeah, usually no socks.
All right. Yeah, I feel like I read something that it's good, like it actually like helps you sleep, but I can't remember any of the logic or reasoning behind it. And yeah, so most nights I do wear socks. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe I need lighter socks. Like when you say socks, Doug, is it like athletic socks or pantyhose? Like what are you wearing?
Yeah, they're like thigh highs.
Okay.
Yeah. So no, they're very thin. I have like these very thin merino wool socks that I'll wear. So they're very breathable and they feel good.
Cool.
And then yeah, other times like they're just, it's more like, what do you call it? Fishnet type stockings. So it's super breathable. I wear them on my hands too. The little sock puppets.
Yeah, nice. You should bring those to FinCon if we're roomies. Awesome.
So a couple quick notes with Ghostbed. So they actually have a very cool new massage topper. It's about 3 inches thick, and it has like some air bladder things in there. It also has like the cooling gel. It's very comfortable, and you can literally put it on top of your mattress. They also have just a full range of mattresses, including like an RV mattress and big plush ones and firm and soft and fluffy and whatever. So definitely check it out there. Ghostbed is a family-owned business with 20-plus years of experience and over 60,000 five-star reviews. They have a 101-night at-home sleep trial. You can save 10% if you go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi, or milehighfi is the coupon code.
Do it, and if you've purchased a mattress or anything else from them, send us a note and let me know what you think of the product. Cool. Doug, let's talk about preparation for retirement. So I knew at the end of my career that I was going to do this early retirement thing, but it still gave me a lot of anxiety because the thoughts that were going through my head, like so many others in our audience, were like, what am I going to do with my time? This job and my life has consumed everything, and all of a sudden I'm going to have this big vacuum of time. So one thing I did is I made this list on my phone. I think I still have it, although I don't look at it much anymore. I started making a list of all these things I could potentially do in retirement, and that eased my anxiety. And I'm kind of silly for having anxiety in the first place, but I'm going to see if I can bring this list up right now. Oh yeah, here it is. I found the list. I've got books on here, movies, all kinds of house projects to do. And this thing is huge. I think I've almost like filled out the Google Keep doc as long as you like. It's got as many words as I could put in there. And I don't think I've looked in this thing in a year or two, but doing this and the exercise of doing this made me consider what life would look like in retirement and put down my anxiety a little bit, but I'm looking at this and I haven't gotten to any of it. I don't think I ever will.
Oh, Doug, there's a house projects.
Really?
Have you done any of those?
Yeah. I have done most of those. Unfortunately, like all the good things, I haven't gotten to any of this. Become a better guitar player, photography, video games. I've hardly done that. Exercise. Okay. I've done that. Yeah, I've got books, and I don't think I've gotten to any of those. Like, you're talking to someone, and they'll give you, like, oh, read this book or read this book. And
so it was like a brain dump situation, right? So you were a little anxious about the void of time. You wrote stuff down, and it didn't even matter if you looked back at it, right? Like, you just felt better when you wrote it down.
Yeah, that's correct. And knowing that, I had that in my back pocket, like, okay, if I sit around and I'm bored one day, I can just pull out this list and pick something from there and go do it.
Yeah. Okay. And do you remember if you actually did reference it, like in the early, whatever, few months or something?
I don't think I have. Like, I hope I get around to it someday. I'm like 7.5 years into it. Maybe someday I'll look at my list and get to some of that shit.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So another way you can prepare for retirement is, I think the whole way, Doug, that we do retirement in the United States is screwed up because we work hard, and usually what we're at the end of our career, we're doing the most important work. If you're in corporate America, you're up to like management or whatever, you might be a VP, and then all of a sudden you're just going to stop doing that and do whatever comes next. So you're doing the most profound work of your life, probably the most important, and then you're asked to do nothing at all right after that, which I can see is very disconcerting and why people would be listless and really struggle with this. And one thought I've always had is, like, you wouldn't buy a car without test driving it. You wouldn't buy a house without checking it out and having an inspection. But we retire without any practice and without any test drive. So my suggestion for anyone, if you could hook this up, is to try to go part-time or take a sabbatical or take a leave. We have a friend right here in town who gave his leave from work last week. He told them, I quit. And one interesting thing is they're like, whoa, 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 not so fast. What we can do is we can give you 3 months of you leaving. So you've left the company, but we're going to continue your health insurance. You still have to pay like your part, but you're going to still be like an employee. You're just on leave. And if you want to come back at the end of the 3 months, you can. And I don't think there's any chance he's going to, but he's like, why would I not do this? They're going to give me subsidized health insurance for these 3 months or whatever. Which brings me to my last point. Be a good employee, because if you're good, your work is going to try to find some way to accommodate a part-time situation or a sabbatical situation. Where if you're not a good employee and you tell them this, they're just going to be like, get the hell out. And by the way, you don't even need 2 weeks. You could just leave right now. So being a good employee will open up more options like this to you.
Although, he's still chained to the fucking job. Congratulations to him. I didn't know he did that, but he's been talking about it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So that's great. A couple things I want to challenge with you on this one. So you mentioned at the end of your career, like, you're often doing the most important work, but important to who? Like, the company? They're like making the most money from you at that point in time. So unless it's actually important to you or what your purpose is, then it is completely irrelevant to me, because I don't care. Like, you shouldn't care about like the company's bottom line, because they'll fucking lay you off. They don't care about you. Like, I don't know why that's in people's heads. That's bananas.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why we talked about trying to separate yourself from work and not validating yourself. But do you think most people are like that? I think most people want to climb the ladder of their work and achieve these things. I don't think most people, when they go to work every day, are like, oh, I can't wait to be out of here. You know what? Maybe some people are like that, but I think a lot still want the validation and recognition of climbing the corporate ladder.
Fact is, we've both been out of it too long. We have no idea. So I would say there's probably, like, depending on the job and the company and how long someone worked there, like, they may be eager to climb the corporate ladder. But obviously, I think, like, some of the younger generation, younger than us by whatever, a decade or two, they are eager to not do as much work and maybe work from home and, like, have a more flexible schedule. And they're like, just pay me. I just want to have a little freedom and I want to work from home. So I think that's probably a thing. What do you think?
Okay, I hope so. I hope it's changing. I remember with my job, especially when I was in corporate America, you'd have your annual review. They'd be like, where do you see yourself in like 5 years and all this crap? And I'd always tell them what I thought they wanted to hear, like, oh, software architect or whatever. But really, the real answer was, I just want to be in my cube doing just what I do now and hopefully talking to you even less. Like, I don't care if I don't talk to anyone for the entire day. I just want to come here, write code, and leave and have you send me direct deposit that money like every week. And that's all I really care about. But I don't know how many people think like that. It's probably more prevalent with tech workers or engineers who really do like their core work. But even them, a lot of them get forced into management, even if they don't want to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one. And I mean, like, at the right place, like being a good employee, and it does potentially give you options. But the question is the opportunity cost worth it? So, yeah. So it depends, and you never know. Because the thing is, like, the person that we're talking about, he could pay for his own health insurance, right?
Yes.
Like, it doesn't actually matter.
Yeah. And the thing with him is
it's such a small amount. It's like, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. So just to be clear though, he is going to be done with his job like next week, and he doesn't have to do anything. Like, he doesn't have to report to them or anything, but they're still going to give him like the subsidized health
insurance. That's right. I would do that 100%.
Yeah. And then at the end of that period, he just has to tell them that he's not coming back. And I'm like, can you think you can get that extended further? Cause that sounds pretty cool. And he said, yeah, he didn't think so, but we'll report back. My last point in preparing for retirement is to build a rich life outside of work. Now, it's going to be a lot more difficult, especially if you've got kids and a busy life, but there's no reason why you can't start trying to find your purpose and working in your hobbies and doing all of that stuff right now. You don't have to wait till you quit. I think it's going to make the transition a lot easier if you've already started establishing your post-life work or your post-work life before you quit work.
What do you mean by rich life?
I mean, so if rich life, the things that give you purpose that are not work, that are not things you do for money. And it doesn't, when I say rich, that has nothing to do with money. Building what your life is going to look like post-work, but start doing it now and thinking about it. And you can do these things in snippets. Like, one of the things I realized is, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but if you don't know what retired life is going to look like, think of what you do when you're not at work. A lot of that stuff just expands, right? Like, I don't have to go to the gym for 25 hurried minutes and try to get my workout in. I can be there for 2.5 hours like I was this morning. And it feels a lot better if you don't have to go through life at that fast pace. But whatever a rich, purposeful life looks like for you, you don't have to wait till you're done with your work to start trying to figure that out.
And then where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Hopefully not here with you in the basement, Doug.
So did you prepare for your rich life before you retired? I know you went down part-time, so you went down like to 4 days and then to 3 days, and then you finally stopped, right?
Yeah, no, I did not, and I'm still not quite there yet, although it's getting closer.
Okay.
Just because we bogged ourselves down with all these stupid house projects.
So, okay. And overall, like you said, you would have spent more time with hobbies and other socializing and stuff like that, and like prepared to do that and less home renovation stuff.
Yes, bought probably two less houses that needed work and spent more me time instead of that.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, perfect. So in preparing, you got to figure out what your retirement life is going to look like. So how do people approach this?
Yeah, we're getting into the meat of it now. I think the first thing, let's set up a couple basic rules. You should acknowledge that successful retirement is going to be work in itself. You can't just quit and expect these things to come to you. You're going to have to work on it, do experiments, figure yourself out, talk to people, and that is going to be work in itself. You need to let yourself off the hook because you don't have to have it all figured out right now. The fun is in the journey and doing these experiments and figuring out what resonates with you and what doesn't. And finally, it's going to be different for everyone. What resonates for you is going to be completely different for someone else. You might want to volunteer or go hike the El Camino or whatever all these earlier retirements do. And that might be someone else's nightmare.
Do you have any interest in hiking that Camino?
I actually do. I think it'd be cool. Like Mindy and I had talked about doing the Appalachian Trail, but what's really unappealing about doing that now is I hate sleeping in a tent on the ground. But I guess when you do the El Camino, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you know more about it, is you can sleep like in a room every night and there's food that you could just buy. So you don't have to worry about any of that. You're pretty much just walking the whole day, the whole day with maybe a backpack with some clothes and nothing else.
That's what it, my understanding is too.
Yeah. Be super cool. How about you? Would you ever do anything like that? Or?
Potentially, that one for some reason doesn't jump out to me, even though I know, like we know several people that have done it and they all seem very happy that they did it, but I would maybe need to look at the geography and see what's there, but I have never been like drawn to, it's in Spain, right?
Yeah, Spain, maybe Portugal.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't been drawn to that area of the world specifically. Nothing against it, the trail or the path or anything like that. But yeah, I'm not super interested, I guess.
I think they've got other ones, like our friend Rachel Richards just did one in Switzerland, like the Mont Blanc Trail or something like that. And that one seems cooler to me too, like going through the mountains.
Yeah. And that seemed more like outdoorsy and stuff. This sounds like you go through like from town to town. It's like a pilgrimage, right? I'm super ignorant.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
Some religious origins.
Right. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Let's talk about some of the basic tenets of what retirement life will look like. And I alluded to this a moment ago, but if you're not sure, consider what your weekends look like, because a lot of times retirement life is just an expansion of that. Do you think that's true, Doug?
I think that's probably a good way to look at it. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's some divergence with certain people, but yeah, it's like a long weekend. And as Elizabeth stopped working like 2 months ago or so, basically, I don't know, like 5 or 6 days a week feel like Friday and Saturday. Like it always feels like a weekend. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess you have the structure with the kids, so they have to go to school and stuff.
Yep.
So you know what day it is. But yeah, we're having trouble keeping track.
I hardly know what day it is, or sometimes even what week or month it is, even with children. Like, you're out of school, so it must be summer, or almost summer.
And I guess, well, for you, your weekends were filled with like home renovation and like busyness generally, right?
Yeah, and a lot of kid stuff. And now we just do that throughout the week. Like we'll take a bike ride today with them or go for a hike. My second one, this is something a lot of us neglect just because we don't have time or because our lives are so stressful that we lose track of our health and let ourselves get into a state that we don't have to be in. So I think the most important thing you could do after you quit is to get yourself in shape. And that's both physical health and mental health. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the mindset episode. But now you've got the time to walk and go to the gym. So that should be the absolute core of what you do. And I think you need to have a routine too. You can't sleep till 10 o'clock. You're going to have some kind of routine, even though you don't have a job. We talked about this a little bit in the last episode, so we're not going to say too much about that. And at least here in Longmont, there are a lot of other early retirees and a lot of interesting people. Social network is very important. We're going to talk about that in a future episode. But one interesting thing is, I think we're pretty fortunate, Doug. There's a lot of things going on, a lot of people, a lot of parties, a lot of interesting projects and work. And I used to say yes to all of that. And then pretty soon you've got like 36 hours of stuff to do, even though you only have 16 waking hours in the day. Yeah. Have you struggled with that at all? And I noticed you're better at controlling yourself. We were at a mutual friend's get together yesterday and you left before anyone else.
Yeah. We do a decent job of making sure we don't overcommit we're super lucky, and it kind of varies with the seasons. So it's like nice weather outside, so there's more get-togethers. But like, I think last week there were like 4 consecutive days of like some sort of social gathering. And then the week before it was the same thing. And yeah, it's awesome. Cause then you could just kind of pick and choose and you're like, oh, I got some other stuff that day. I don't want to be too busy, or I got an early thing the next morning. So you could just kind of bow out. And super lucky, because I don't know if there's any other places, unless you're in like a huge, massive, like maybe if you're in like New York City or other huge cities where there's enough like sheer volume of people where you could actually have that. But we hang out all the time. So everybody kind of is, I mean, it's like an old neighborhood, or it's like Cheers, right? You just kind of roll in, say hello, grab a beer, and then stay for a little while and then head on out, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Are you, you're working on not doing too much stuff?
Yeah, I'm trying to default to no until, unless we can really make a case for it. And I think you said something along the lines of like one thing per day or one thing per weekend or something like that. Do you remember what you said, or am I misquoting you?
No, that sounds about right. I think Pete says something like that too, where it's just like, ah, if I could just get like one big little project done, that's good. But yeah, if there's too many activities, then I mean, it's just stressful. Yeah. It's stressful for the whole day. Because here's the thing, something's going to go wrong. Traffic's going to be a little bit longer than expected. If you're cooking something, like something's going to go wrong. Not all the time, but like half the time, whatever you think is going to happen is not going to happen. So it just fucks up the whole day. So yeah, just one thing is better.
Yeah. And if you've got that buffer of time, you can recover from whatever that thing is that goes wrong.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on. Let's talk more about what retirement life is going to look like and how to execute it successfully. I like this one a lot. This was one of your points, Doug, to redefine success. I think this is really important because a lot of people still pursue the money. Like how many people do we know who have retired, or they claim to have retired, and then they're like, oh, I've got this Etsy side hustle or this and this and this, and they move right on from their formal job to giving themselves another job. It might be a lot better because they have autonomy, but they're moving on to making more money. Their goal is money and not living life. So I think everyone after they quit should be forced to do something where they don't make money for maybe 6 months, or that would be a good experiment for everyone. And then if you really feel that's important, you can pivot back to that.
Right. And one good way you could kind of force yourself into it, and I'm looking forward to the time when we're going to do this, Elizabeth and I, when you're doing Roth conversions. So you're moving money from your IRA over to your Roth, and you don't want to have, you know, other income, especially not significant income, because you'll be taxed at a higher rate as you make the conversion over to the Roth. So is that on your horizon? I don't know if you guys have a lot of money to move over.
Yeah, we will probably do that. Our 401ks are our biggest account now. But I don't know. We might just be able to live off our post-tax account for the until we're actually old enough to hit up our 401ks.
Right. Is there some value in moving it over sooner, though? I don't know. That's where you get an advisor in.
Yeah, I think there would be a real quick side diversion is if you think RMDs are going to come up in your future, then you'd want to start moving that money out ASAP.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll probably want to do that then.
Yeah, I think so. We will need to do it. It's just a matter of when, and you still have some income, so it's not super on our radar. Yeah, this next one I like a lot too, and this is something you've talked about, Doug, is finding your flow state, because I think you know your true purpose when you get into your flow state. Do you want to elaborate on what a flow state is?
Yeah, I think people can look it up a little deeper, but at the most basic level, the way it hits me is like you're working on some activity where you lose track of time, and you can just do it for many hours, and it feels good. It feels effortless, or at least positive, and maybe not effortless. So for me, there's a few of them. One of them for me is playing guitar. I'm not super great, but it really engages my mind. And once I get into a rhythm, I literally will think I'm going to sit down for like 5 minutes and play, and it'll be 2.5 hours. Like it'll just fly by. It's insane. Exercising is another one. I don't run anymore, but when I would run, I would often be able to, you know, run for whatever, 1.5 hours, 2 hours or something, and it just kind of blurs by. Hiking is like that now. Working out at the gym, occasionally writing can be like that. It takes me a little while to get in the right frame of mind, but once I get going, then I can keep writing for a few hours and just lose track of time. So do you have any other things to add either to the definition, and then curious what your flow states are?
Yeah, flow states are super interesting. I actually hadn't thought about them too much until you mentioned it on a earlier podcast. And then I realized that I get into them frequently, but I hadn't really realized it or appreciated it. So I think people need to pay attention to themselves and realize when they're in these states and realize the value of them, and that this is where they should focus their time, because that's when you're, that's what really moves you, and that's when you have your true purpose, when you're in this flow state. Yeah, for me, writing is definitely the top one, and I would say walking, and which we'll talk about here in a moment, and thinking. Sometimes I have really great thoughts when I'm out for a walk, and sometimes pooping as well, but mainly walking.
You'll lose track of time. You're just like, oh, I've been in here for 45 minutes.
And he's like, get out of there. I need to be in there. And I'm like, oh, wait, I just said, let me write this down. And we talked on the previous episode about experimentation. How do you know what you're going to like unless you try lots of different things? And the great thing about fire life is you've got the time to explore yourself and to try different stuff. If it doesn't work out, quit whatever it is and do something else. Can you think of anything you've experimented with, Doug, that you quit or that hadn't worked out? And I could think of one that you used to do that you do less, your beer judging. I don't know if that's a valid example, but...
Oh, yeah. I think we talked about it last episode a little bit, but yeah, it was time to move on. I can't think of, and it wasn't really an experiment. It was like, for a while, it was a huge hobby, a bit of a lifestyle, just because like a lot of my friends were from the beer community in general, the brewing community. And I can't think of anything super recently, since I moved to Longmont, where I've checked it out and it didn't pan out. How about you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think too. And I can't really think of a great example, maybe just because we've been busy and I haven't had time to try new things.
And you know what? I bet we have. And if it didn't work out, we just don't remember it. We just moved on.
So. Yeah. I know I do many experiments all the time with my routine. Like I'll try to do things at different times of the day. I'll try slightly different tweaks for my workout, try to cook things differently. So I'm always doing little experiments like that constantly.
Nice. And you are the avid walker. So we talk about this in the sound check at the end. So people should hang on for that. But yeah, talk about walking here.
Yeah, there's a Stanford study where you could look up Google Stanford study walking and you'll see what walking does for your creativity. So next time you're bored, go for a walk. Don't look at your phone. Don't do anything. Maybe bring a notebook and something to write with. And it's amazing. Like your brain wants to think and do things. So when you haven't given your brain anything to think about, it will come up with stuff. So I think some of my best ideas, my best creativity happens when I go for a walk. And sometimes it takes a little bit to get the gears moving, but it definitely does. I know Morgan Housel talks a little bit about this as well. Mm-hmm. So I think if you don't know what to do with yourself, or you're at a loss, or you're trying to get past some issue, go for a walk and see what happens.
Do you listen to something, or are you just walking and thinking?
Sometimes, you know, that's interesting. Sometimes it doesn't work as well if it's completely silent. So I'll listen to even a podcast with words, but then my mind jumps away and I'll find that I'm not even listening to that anymore. It's just on in the background. And that's what works for me, but it could be different for anyone. Sometimes I like classical music too, like not words, because that can distract you.
Okay. Yeah. And I do a lot of podcast listening, but every now and then, I would say maybe like 30% of the time, I won't listen to anything and just walk. And usually I feel less stressed out.
Yeah.
Not that podcasts make me stress, but sometimes there's something in there where I'm like, oh, I should do this or do that. And sometimes it's nice just to walk.
It's nice to walk and force yourself to look around. Like I'll try to take a different route every time and try to make myself notice things, like whether it's architecture or someone's garden. I was just looking at the people on the corner over here who had someone do beautiful work on their house. You ever notice those people? Or
I don't know which one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of corners.
It's at the end of your street. You'll know when you see it, they've got like a little bridge in their yard. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
Man, it's super nice. So yeah, go for a walk. Our next suggestion for building a successful retirement life is really leverage your community. make friends. I'm trying to think of some of the opportunities that have come into my life as a result of building community. I'm part owner of a co-working space, the MMM HQ in downtown Longmont. I have this podcast because I met you, and I think we met through the HQ, which is interesting. And I've had lots of public speaking opportunities through community, which is great. All these things have improved my life, except maybe this podcast. This is probably a downgrade for my life, but I'll push through it. Just kidding, Doug. So yeah, your community can definitely give you ideas and lift you up in retirement and just give you cool people to hang out with, if nothing else.
I think most of the happiness studies out there usually cite community and like having a good social network as one of the most important things. So, you know, back to your point earlier about the retired males having like a growing suicide rate, like I think it's probably related to lack of community.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, especially when their partner passes and then you just find yourself alone. A lot of people, unfortunately, they don't have good relationships with their kids, or their kids live in another part of the country. So all of a sudden you're just lost, which is not good. Yeah. And the last thing I'll say about this, and this comes from Diana, who does economy. There's so much going on. If you can't figure out anything better to do with your life than your job, it's probably from a lack of creativity and effort. There's just so many things to do. My list that I alluded to on my phone has hundreds of things. Most of them I'll never get around to. I'm a pretty boring, like, I don't find myself creative. I suck at playing instruments, but still, the world is huge and there's so much to offer. I can't imagine that, like, I would never go back to work. They'd have to pay me a super severe amount of money, and it would just be for a very short amount of time. Yeah, I can't imagine ever going back.
And I want to rephrase, not that Diana phrased it exactly like that, I don't think, but I'm going to take it in a different spot. It's what I'm reading here, it says that this is from a lack of creativity and effort. And it feels like we're, you know, someone is sad and we're blaming them, right? So a lot of times, if you just start some action, like you'll start feeling better, like whatever it is. It could be exercise. You're like, oh, I want to learn an instrument. So you can, you know, rent an instrument, take a few lessons, do the experiment, right? Like maybe it turns out you hate the thing that you thought you were going to like. Don't buy the sailboat. Take like a sailing class, like take a little piece and start taking some action and moving forward. Because I imagine if people are in a spot where they can't think of any good ideas, they can kind of spiral out of control. So a good thing to do is start taking action versus just saying like, you lack creativity and effort. Get your shit together. It's your own fault, which I mean, we're responsible for our own shit. But do you have anything to add for tips on how someone could like start moving forward?
Oof. Yeah, that's a hard one. Yeah. And I didn't mean to be judgmental with that, although I'm sure I sounded.
It's the whole show. I mean.
Yeah. 0 stars on Apple Podcasts. I would say go for a walk, see what comes to you, and really be introspective and think about what moves you deep down. And this can relate back to your job. If there's parts of your job that you really like, maybe you don't have to stay at the job. And we're gonna get to this actually in a moment. But maybe there's parts of your job that you can incorporate into your life, even if you're not working at that place anymore. And it's a great starting point. I would just tell people not to have anxiety. Like I heard this from one person who retired, who didn't have anything to go to. She was just not happy with her job. So she left, and it took her a couple of years to figure it out. But she said she was so happy that she didn't have anything to transition to, because that really made her do the work and be thoughtful and figure out what she really wanted in life. And she's in a much better place than she would have been had she had something to transition to. So you don't have to have the whole thing figured out. Like I don't have anything figured out. 5 years from now, life might be completely different, and it's okay. You just have to be okay with yourself and give yourself grace and know that it's going to work out. And if it doesn't, you can just go back to your job. Yeah. So just to close up this part, if leaving your job gives you anxiety, no decision is permanent. Like I said, you can always just go back to your work, especially now. There's a real shortage of workers, and you might be able to work out something like a lot of, I know the big tech companies, if you leave in good standing, they'll take you back. And some of them put parameters around that, like a year or two. I think Apple specifically does that. And if they know you're a good worker, they know good people are hard to find. So it's not going to be an issue going back. But again, and if you really love your job, maybe there's some way you can incorporate the parts that you love into your life after work. I always thought with myself that I would do some coding, and I still might do that, although I've been saying that for 7 years and I've never gotten back to it. Doug is shaking his head. But that's maybe the lie I tell myself.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably not going to do that.
In the course of this podcast, we made a separation between working life and post-work life. But your really goals, your big goal should be to live a purposeful existence no matter where you are in life. There's no reason why you can't find your purpose and be satisfied even if you have a job that you don't quite like so much. You should be working on this thing throughout your life and not waiting till you retire to really pursue purpose and the things you really like. A job can give you this purpose, but there's going to be a lot of compromises with it. You have to be there for a certain amount of time. You might have to work for or with people you don't like. And that's where the five part comes in. That's going to give you options. So your first goal should be to get that down, get the money down, so you never have to be in a situation where you don't want to be. And that's the real value of FIRE. It gives you the opportunity to pursue the pure version of yourself and not to be stuck in situations that you're unhappy with.
And one other final thought, and really it kind of wraps it together, I think. When you do have the job, you can start testing and developing your hobbies. So when you do stop working, you have the rich life that you were describing before. So you have that structure, whether it's specifically like solo hobbies or it's the community and being, you know, more active in your community and have like the social network so that you're not sitting around by yourself.
Yes.
And you got your folks around you. All right. So in part three, we're going to talk about how mindset impacts happiness. You can also shoot us an email if you have tips. We're here to learn as well. If you have any thoughts or questions, and you could shoot us an email at doug@milehighfi.com. We also have a Facebook group, which we'll link up in the description. And there's always a lot of discussion there. I'm almost never in there, but I hear it's fantastic. So shoot us an email. Let us know what you think.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. I was looking over the notes and I saw that you wrote, and you've mentioned it before, that you try to get like 25,000 steps a day. Is that accurate? Is that true if we look in your phone history or whatever?
Yes. I don't always do it, but some days I get a lot more. I think my record for this year is 40,000 and something. And my all-time record when I've had the watch is 50,000, which is about 20 miles. But I know I once did more than that in my life when I hiked Mount Whitney in California in one day, which probably would have been 55 or 60,000.
Wow, that's crazy. So what about like, so you get it most days. How do you deal with it on like busy? The thing is, it's just a huge amount of time. I love walking outside and it's just, it's a huge amount of time. So how do you reconcile that with the rest of your day?
Yeah, it's hard and it can seem wasteful, especially when you don't get your steps in and now I'm just doing laps around the block. Or there's been times where I'm like 200 steps away and it's bedtime. I'm like, I'm just going to walk back and forth around the bed. But the truth is, usually I get it just through my natural activity in life. Like today, I worked out at the gym. So what I'll usually do is a really hard set and then I'll do a lap or two around the track to recover. And then I'll do another hard set and repeat, repeat, repeat. And I'm looking at my watch. I came from the gym here. I've got 10,861 steps. So I'm almost halfway there just from what I do naturally. I've got all these home projects going on, so I'm running around to do those. And sometimes I'll be purposefully inefficient, like I'll won't grab all my tools at once from the shed to force myself to go back. And that one is a little bit silly, but usually I don't even have to do that. I just happen to leave a very active lifestyle. It's when I have to edit podcasts or sit down and do some book work that I have a hard time getting the steps in. But even then, yeah, bring up an audiobook or a good podcast, and then it doesn't feel like you're just aimlessly walking for nothing. But it should be okay to aimlessly walk for nothing as well. I shouldn't judge myself for it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's amazing. And walking, a lot of there's a lot of runners in our audience out there. I used to run, but walking is like a better exercise.
I think so, like speed walking where you're walking really fast because then you get into that fat burning zone. So it might not be cardio, but you're definitely doing something.
Well, and you could do it every day. Like it's hard on your body to run every single day. It's hard on your joints, but you could walk every day. But there was a subtext in here. So for the true fans out there, the reason why the book is so late is because you're taking so many goddamn steps every day.
That is.
Like, write the book, man.
Yeah, I need to attach like a laptop to my body so I can type it out while I walk, like a walking laptop. I wonder if anyone's invented such a thing.
I think, those dorks probably have. I was going to say you can get like a standing desk with like the little treadmill thing there.
Yeah, or the Apple Vision Pro. I could be like waving my hands in airports, typing when I'm walking. And
do you ever do like the voice typing, or is that how they say it? Like the voice typing, just like on your phone or whatever? Can you write while you're walking and then get AI to clean it up?
Yeah, I do record lots of notes that way. I don't know if I could write the book that way though.
It would just sound like a disjointed stream of consciousness.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I don't get that many steps. That's a lot of steps, man. I'm more around, I would say like 13,000 on average for the last several years. So
okay, that's still not bad.
Yeah.